Welcome to Get Intimate with Oliver Wong. This is the 10th episode. Oh my god, it's a little milestone for me and my producer Soken. Oh my god, I cannot believe we made it to the 10th. Whew. It has been quite a journey. It's been 3 months and oh my god, I love doing it. And I know my producer loves doing this as well. It's a lot of work, but we really learned a lot from our guests, from their life story. It has been pretty fulfilling for me. Yeah, and thank you so much for listening to our content. It is really, really appreciated. I really hope all my cuties, they can take away something from each episode and maybe not a big enlightenment about their life, but just something to take away. You know, maybe when you are taking a shower, you will think about, oh, Asian musician. Huh, that is interesting. You know, stuff like that. Anyways, if you really like our content and you want to support us, what you can do is you can follow us on Instagram at Get Intimate Podcast. If you feel a little generous and want to support us financially, what you can do is go on Patreon page. So the link is patreon.com/OliverWongComedy. Even if just $5 per month will keep us going. And you will also get some benefits in return if you sponsor us on Patreon. Go check it out. You might get a virtual lap dance from me. I'm not kidding. Check it out. All right. So today's guest is Matteo Martinez. He is a stand-up comedian, writer, and director. Let me tell you guys, he is one of the most beautiful human beings I've ever met, inside and out. I'm really lucky to get to know him. So lucky to have him as a friend in my life. Oh my god, this person, Matteo, he is full of love for this world. I'm speechless. He's an amazing person. I'm so lucky to get to know him. Really. So Matteo is also a gay man. So does your host, Oliver Wong. So in this episode, we delved into his life experience as a gay man. Like, he grew up in the 80s and the 90s, and he talked about what it feels like to be a gay man back then, and he also talked about internalized homophobia and his marriage with his current husband, and we also talked about the commercialization of gay pride. So it's a really fun episode. I hope you guys will stick around to the end. And just to kick off this episode, I want to play a clip of Matteo Martinez's stand-up set where he is talking about gay pride.
Did you guys go to gay pride last month? Yes, of course you did, because there are more straight people at gay pride than there are gay people. It used to get me super mad. I'm like, don't they have their own community things to go to, like monster truck rallies or the Grove? Get out! You know, but then, courageous, forward-thinking straight people ally with the LGBT community to help us win gay marriage. Thank you, straight people. Thank you, straight people. Yes! Beautiful. Because now, no matter what happens to me and my husband, I get half. Thank you, straight people! Yes! Show us how it's done. People say things like, we don't need gay pride anymore because gay's mainstream and we're all good now. And I'm like, excuse me, the struggle continues. For instance, to this day, gay men are still forced to use straight boys' bathrooms. Disgusting! Disgusting! Oh my god, you don't want to touch anything. You don't want to sit anywhere. Yeah, I still use them because I need somewhere to go have sex, but
Let's get intimate. let's get into it. Da, 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 da. Let's get into it.
Well, hi, Matteo Martinez. Welcome to my casa.
Muchas gracias.
Oh, I totally forgot you speak Spanish when I said that. I didn't mean to do it. Yeah, but I learned Spanish for a few months, actually.
Oh, muy bien. I love it.
Okay, you see, I couldn't even respond to you in Spanish. That is how bad I am. Yeah. So, I bought you a boba tea.
You did?
I did. This is a boba tea.
Uh-oh.
So, for our listeners, I bought Matteo a boba tea, and then he have not seen what this boba tea is yet. So, my first question is, Matteo, have you drinking boba tea before?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay. So, you know there are different flavors of boba tea, right?
Mm-hmm.
And different tea base.
Yes.
So, I want you to take a guess what kind of boba tea I bought for you.
Do I get to try it first?
No, you just have to guess.
Just
guess from, what kind of boba tea that do you think I will buy for you?
I'm going to say it's either taro or green tea half sugar.
Okay. Okay, cool. All right. So now I'm going to let you take a taste.
Okay.
But I'm not going to let you see what it is yet.
Okay. Oh, this is fascinating. I feel like you're really putting my Asian chops to the test. Like, am I... Because I was born here in Southern California in a town called Monterey Park. And it has a very heavy Asian population. And then my parents moved out to another suburb that was very Asian as well.
Yeah. Did you know Monterey Park is called Beverly Hills for Taiwanese?
That's great. Yeah. I did not know that.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see if I can do this.
Woo. Don't look at it.
Okay. Okay. This is lychee boba.
Can you taste what is the flavor of the tea? Oh my god, I hope you like it. You don't seem to like it. You are like so confused. You are like questioning everything.
Because I'm so bad with taste and flavors, but I feel like it feels like strawberry. It tastes like strawberry. But it tastes like lychee.
So it's red guava green tea.
Red guava green tea.
With crystal balls.
Okay, this is a very like... pro level boba tea that you brought.
Maybe. Do you like this? Oh my god, I feel like you don't like it. Oh my god.
No, I love it. I just can't believe, like, that was really hard. Like, I thought you were gonna go easy on me. Like,
oh no, no, it's not just gonna be milk tea.
Yeah, that's what I thought. You really went hard. Red guava.
Red guava.
Listeners,
yeah.
You know that is not a regular flavor in the world.
No, it's not.
No, thank you.
It's not a classic boba tea. Let me give you a coaster.
Yeah. This is Oliver's gay side coming out. Like, I put my little wet boba tea on his table and he's like, let me get you a coaster, girl. Great. Well, hello.
Hello. Well. So, I know you grew up as a gay kid in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
Back then, did you participate in gay pride?
No, I mean, I grew up in a Catholic home.
Yeah.
And in a conservative part of Orange County. And when I finally was able to understand what being gay was, I was like, oh no. Uh-oh, this is not in my plan. I don't want this.
Yeah.
I'd like to return it, please. And then I was really suspicious of gay people for so long because I didn't like that part of myself and I didn't like them.
Yeah.
So no, I did not go to gay pride. I wanted to stay far away from that stuff as I could.
When is the first gay pride that you went to?
I moved up to San Francisco to do graduate school. And this was 99.
Okay.
1999.
Okay, so 1999, you were like 20...
Yeah, what is that, 24?
Okay,
25?
Okay. Okay.
I'm so bad at math.
Yeah, me too. So I'm curious. So back then, what was the gay pride like? Because I think in 1999, we know gay marriage was not legalized.
Right.
And the gay movement were still pretty struggling. They have a lot of things to protest about.
Yeah.
But... versus right now, hey, I feel like it feels like we have already have our victory. So all these gay prides are about celebration instead of like protesting something, protesting about policy change and stuff like that. So I don't know if like from your observation, if there is something you also noticed.
Gay pride then was definitely, there was more of a political bent to it. There was a lot more urgency to, you know, fighting for equality. We had just come out of, you know, the AIDS epidemic at that point.
Right.
That was, you know, the antiretroviral drugs were still new. And it was a really difficult time because we knew that we had to keep pushing for equality. I think especially because the gay rights struggle hasn't always included everybody under that rainbow flag.
I know. It's always for mostly middle class white people.
Yes.
I'm being honest. Yeah.
No, I think that's a good observation. And and I didn't always feel everybody was being included. Even then, I felt like I didn't even belong, even though I was gay, because I just didn't identify with, like, you know, these cisgendered white guys.
Yeah.
I didn't understand. My life was very different from theirs.
Yes.
As a Latino person being gay. And it was just hard for me to relate. So I think over the years, there's an awareness that pride must become more inclusive, but I don't know if it really is. You know, right now you have to pay in LA to go to pride. It's like $35 for the day ticket.
Yeah. And some can be more expensive.
And some can be more expensive. What about our LGBT brothers and sisters who can't afford that?
I know that is very exclusive to some people. Yeah.
And I think we need to start to really walk our talk and be more inclusive and more sensitive and reach out harder.
Yeah. I think with all the corporate sponsorship, they were able to, you know, have celebrities to come to Gay Pride to perform. And that definitely increases the visibility of Gay Pride itself.
Sure.
But that's also why Gay Pride is becoming so expensive, because they need to spend money on hiring celebrities.
And by the way, the celebrities that they tend to invite really appeal to, you know, gay white guys.
You know, it's so funny that I have heard somebody said, if all the gay movement leaders are Black people, Latino people, or Asian people, gay people will never be liberated. The reason why gay movement can move so quickly is because most of the leaders are white people. And that is easier for them to talk to politicians who are also white.
Mm-hmm. Listen, multiple things are true at the same time.
Yeah.
It may be true that actually may be easier for them to talk to white politicians. And what's also true is that we need more representation from minority voices in leadership positions, not just in the gay rights movement, everywhere.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, we need to start to again, reach out more as a community. And the corporatization thing, that's so crazy. I mean, if you had told me when I was a 20-year-old scared closeted gay kid that, like, one day, like, you could get like a Pride Happy Meal at McDonald's, I would be like, excuse? No, I mean, not yet, but might as well. You know, I would have told you were crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I can't believe it. On the one hand, like, here we are, you know, with a kind of visibility we don't actually want. You know, it's become less about political urgency of making sure everyone is taken care of and free and equal.
Yeah.
And more about, like, you know, having sex in Times Square outside, you know, and, you know, doing it while wearing like a Target.
Right.
A t-shirt.
You know, which is also a form of liberation, but not.
It gets,
but we need more than that.
Yes.
It gets
complicated. You know, so again, I think it's not about like deciding on any one of these things as being the absolute truth. It's about trying to hold all of these truths as a community at once.
How do you feel about the commercialization of gay pride? Because I have some problems with it. So as you know, during the Gay Pride Month, all these corporations, they will change logo to like rainbow logos. Yes. And then they will release products with rainbow icons, stuff like that. And I have nothing against those products. I think, sure, they are fine. I mean, they are cool and they look nice. I don't mind wearing them. But if you really want to help LGBTQ community, instead of spending like $200 on a pair of new shoes, how about just donate those $200 to a nonprofit?
I think some of those companies do that.
Yeah.
I don't know how many of them do that.
But it's just a portion of their proceeds, though. It's not 100%. Right. And that is my issue. Because, well, I don't think Nike needs more money.
No, they're fine.
Yeah, but a lot of nonprofits, they need more money, especially the ones they are not well funded.
Absolutely.
And I think the reason why those not well funded nonprofits are not getting a donation is because all the corporations are occupying the media. So people don't really see, oh, there are so many nonprofits out there that we can actually donate money to. Because everybody, when they see, when they go on the news, when they go on the internet, all they see is all these companies' logo with rainbow. And they're like, oh, I guess that would be the easiest way to support LGBT community, just to buy a shirt with a rainbow.
I think it's like, you know, both of us are comics. And, yeah. And the thing about our comedy, you know, I go back to Hannah Gatsby, who did the special Nanette. And what she talks about is that, like, we save our pain. The real impact of our pain is for us to hold.
Yeah.
And it's really hard because we're always saving the audience from the reality of where our jokes come from.
Yeah.
I think, you know, this is the same thing that happens with Corporization of Pride, where all of these people's stories and all of the anguish that they're still fighting and facing every day in their personal lives is lost when it becomes about like a rainbow Apple Watch band. That doesn't say anything about pain. You know, it's just crass commercialization.
It's a simplified way of understanding what LGBT community is struggling with.
Yeah. If all these companies really wanted to, like, you know, help, I think we should, they should buy us airtime on national television. And then we just sit, you know, gay man, a lesbian woman, a bisexual person, a trans man, a trans woman of color, and just listen to them and just listen to their story so that people can understand what it's like to live our life every day.
Yeah.
The self-policing that we have to do, the marginalization that we feel, the separateness that we feel sometimes.
Yeah. And I was just reading news yesterday. So in the United States, there are 28 states who still have laws where an employer can fire a transgender person without any legal ramifications.
Yes.
And if you are a big corporation and you really support LGBT community, you should probably speak up about this issue. I think that is actually a more effective way of supporting this community instead of just making money from us.
I had a really great opportunity to do that yesterday. There was a situation here in Los Angeles that happened a couple of weeks ago where a trans person went to the Wee Spa downtown. Uh-huh. It's a Korean spa.
And oh yeah, I know that. I've never been there. Have you been?
To Wee Spa?
Yeah.
Yes. I love Korean spas are like something that we used to do in the San Gabriel Valley. Like, right. It's super fun. And there's other stuff that happens there, of course, but that's not the part I was talking about.
I was like, when you say super fun, I'm like, I'm not sure what do you mean by that.
Oh,
I know. Yeah.
Oh, I just like getting a massage and
more than that.
Well, sometimes just that.
Okay, going back to this transgender person.
They went to the spa and there was a lot of people who had a problem with seeing, you know, this person naked. And my father-in-law is here from Germany right now. And we had a discussion about it because he was like, well, I don't know if I'm comfortable with that. And I'm like, I get it. And let's just talk about like this person's reality for a second. Let's talk about what it might be like to be in their shoes. Well, you know, you have a body, right? And it looks a certain way. And whether or not that's acceptable to others, like, you know, you might have, if somebody judges you for your body, the way that it looks, you know, this is obviously like your body is the way that it looks because, you know, that's who you are. And if you get judged like that, I could imagine that you would feel like really hurt and maybe you would feel feelings of shame and you wouldn't want to do certain things or go certain places because of that shame. Well, I think this trans person, it might not be a typical thing for these people at the spa to see a naked trans person, but when you really look at it, this is just a person and this is their body and they're not they're okay. They're just existing in the world. And I understand the compulsion to say, well, that's other, that's different. I'm not comfortable with that. But if you could broaden what you see in that person, maybe don't look at just their genitals. Maybe if you look at them as a person with feelings who wants to have a nice day at the spa, and this is the, you know, this is who they are. Can you just let that person be at the spa without judgment, without, you know, shaming them? And, you know, so we were able to kind of just play with that. And there's nothing I wanted him to decide. There's no way that I wanted him to feel or come out of that discussion, you know, even understanding something about, you know, what it's like to be trans. I can't do any of that stuff for him. That's something that he's got to do for himself. But just having the conversation and just humanizing that person a little bit that we heard about in the news, I think was a kind of discussion that I was really, I thought was important to have.
But the thing is, your father-in-law mm-hmm. has a gay son.
Yeah.
And you guys are married.
Yeah.
But that does not make him more open-minded.
No. You know, being gay is like a cardigan sweater. You know, yeah. Now it's like, oh.
It's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's that's cool. Kind of cool. That's kind of sweet. You know? That's not where being trans is.
Right. So that's the thing, like LGBT community, like every group is facing different levels of discrimination, different levels of struggles.
Yeah.
But the fact that gay pride is for LGBTQ community, this kind of phrase makes people feel like each group are just kind of being lumped together as if gay's victory is also the victory for transgender people, but that is not true.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
absolutely correct.
Yeah.
And we
yeah.
and we shouldn't stop as a community until all of our brothers and sisters and others are feel safe
yeah.
And feel embraced.
Yeah.
You know, gay guys, we don't have the best record with being nice to the lesbians. You know, we didn't even want them
yeah.
at the first rallies.
Yeah.
The first, you know, marches and things. Again, all we got to do as a community, just keep talking about it, just bringing awareness,
yeah.
you know, to some of the people in our community who, you know, have the privilege to kind of forget the everyday struggle that certain people in our community are still facing.
Yeah. I think the most practical way that you can help is definitely find local nonprofit organization. They are actually providing social services.
Yeah.
Because when you are sick, when you need support, Nike is not going to help you.
That's right.
Is the local nonprofits.
That's right.
Yeah.
Also, Nike's not going to help, you know, incarcerated gay people.
No.
Nike's not going to help, you know, differently abled individuals, gay individuals. They're not going to help impoverished gay people.
Yeah.
In fact, if anything, our community isn't helping impoverished gay people when we, you know, charge these outrageous ticket prices to just even go be a part of the community. Or even show pride by having to buy a stupid rainbow shirt.
Yeah. To clarify, I have nothing against the Nike. I think they are great. I even wear Nike shoes, okay?
Yes.
I love their products. But I'm just saying, just in terms of supporting LGBT community, I think the better way is, like I said,
to... Oh, Oliver, you're a corporate whore. Just say it. Just yes. admit it.
I use Apple products.
No.
iPhone, everything. Yeah.
I think that's okay. Yeah. I think, like I said, so many things are true at the same time, you know?
Right. Yeah.
We can still be advocates and we can still fight.
Yeah.
In our Nikes. And it's okay.
Yes. I'm going to walk the gay pride with my Nike shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Let's take a break. Be right back. This podcast is supported by Truly Insulting. Are you tired of all the toxic positivity you see on social media? Are you looking for someone to tell you that you are indeed a piece of shit? Truly Insulting provides you with professional certified public speakers who will insult you, embarrass you, and let you realize you're not as perfect as you think you are. I know what you are thinking. Why would I want to be insulted when my parents have been doing that since my childhood? Well, here's the thing, okay? Sometimes we could all become assholes at some point. and we need people to tell us how big of an asshole we are. Are you always late and your friends are just too nice to tell you to change? Well, hire a speaker found truly insulting to verbally punish yourself to tell you that your late ass is exactly why your mom never loves you, and it's also why nobody wants to match with you on Tinder, and that's how you are still a desperate, lonely virgin at the age of 45. Well, I guarantee you will never be late again. You do need someone to enlighten you by saying all the dirty truth you don't want to hear. You can also hire a truly insulting speaker to insult other people. Perhaps you want to give your friend a birthday surprise, or you want to insult your neighbor who likes to play loud country music during the night. Seriously? Who listens to country music at 2 in the morning? I love truly insulting because it's so convenient. You just have to fill out an online questionnaire designed to set you up with one of their truly insulting speakers. They are certified by the United States Verbally Aggressive Association. And 1 hour session with each speaker is only $2,000. If you use the promo code Oliver, you can get a panel to insult you during one session. An entire panel. How awesome is that? It's like an orchestra. Go on trulyinsulting.com today for a personal reality check.
This commercial is created for entertainment purposes only. The product that was advertised does not exist.
When did you come out to your families and friends?
I started coming out in 1994. And it was a long process because there was only certain people that I was comfortable telling. And I told my parents last. Mm. They were the last people I told. But I've often said that coming out isn't something you just do once. You know, it took me, but between, I was 19 when I came out to the first person I ever told, my friend Diana Parkinson. And in high school, she was a lesbian, and she was very understanding and caring. And I was able to tell her. But I was 25 before I told my mom and dad. So in those, you know, 6 years, that was really hard. It was like every day I was thinking about who I might tell. And then it took me sometimes weeks and months to get ready to tell them. Mm-hmm. And at least I was telling people, you know, from the time I was like 3 until the time I was, you know, in high school, and I didn't tell anybody. I just carried that by myself. And it was really hard. It used to keep me up at night. I would have done better in school if I wasn't so scared of the constant bullying and harassment and marginalization and emasculating that I got at school.
Were your family supportive when you came
out?
Not
at first. It was really hard for them.
Yeah.
Dad yelled. My mom cried. My brother and sister were okay.
Yeah.
They were young. I mean, obviously they were younger, you know, but it was really hard because, you know, at that time, like, gay meant AIDS.
Right.
It was a different thing. And we need gay health. We need health care for all gay people.
Oh, my God. Do you know how expensive the medication is for HIV?
Yeah, I do. And it's stupid.
It's $3,000 a month.
Yeah, it's stupid. It's stupid and unnecessary and immoral.
Yeah.
You know, for a lot of people that I came out to, that's what they thought.
They were more afraid about your health when you came out.
Oh, well, it's just a matter of time before you get AIDS. How do you feel about that?
Oh my God.
I would be like, well, okay, AIDS is a long way off. Like, you know, you get HIV first and then
too much information for them
now. You know, even into the 90s, like, you know, there was a way to treat HIV so that, you know, as long as we were maintaining, you know, our drug regimens, like, it was fine. It's like having any other kind of chronic disease,
like diabetes,
chickenpox.
Yeah.
So many kids get chicken pox and then it comes back as shingles later in their life.
Yeah.
You know, same thing. We just have to manage HIV in a way, and there's nothing wrong with it or bad about it or shameful about it. And these people using it as a way to like try to dissuade me from being gay.
Yeah.
It was really, really hard because I was so insecure and so impressionable that I listened and I was like, yeah, it is a terrible, I am going to get AIDS and die. It was just so dumb, but I didn't know the difference. And because I internalized so much homophobia, I didn't have access to community that would say, it's okay. Even your fear is okay. It's all right. You're going to be okay. We're going to take care of you or your brothers and sisters. I didn't have that.
When did you start making more gay friends?
Even today in my life, I would say that only 10% of my friends are gay. I mostly know straight people. And I don't know if that's because I grew up, I was raised to be a heterosexual. I have no idea how this works. You'd have to ask
a
doctor. I guess
all parents raise their children as if they are straight.
Well, now I think it's different.
Now I think it's different, but I think our generation's parents,
definitely. So I don't know how much of that is just been beaten into my head. I don't know. I've always gone to where even in my private life, I always go to where I think I'm needed. Meaning I tend to be friends with people that I think I can make a difference with. And so, you know, for a lot of straight people that I came out to in the beginning, I was the only gay person they knew. So I felt very, I felt the pressure of having to represent gay in a very positive way. And I took it as a duty. I don't know. I guess I take my queerness very seriously. I think there's a difference between being gay and being queer. To me, being gay is about, you know, being sexually attracted to other men. But being queer means that I'm not a socially acceptable person.
Have you noticed that you successfully changed somebody's mind?
Over time?
Yeah, I think it takes a long time for somebody to change their mind.
The people I had the most success with was the people I loved the hardest.
Yeah.
I think I watch online, I see so many young people get angry and drag other people, shame other people, get mad. And, you know, there's a time for that. And I think one has to vent.
Yeah.
But I never changed anybody's mind by getting mad at them.
No. And you're not going to change somebody's mind over the internet, by the way. I don't think so. You really need to talk to them.
I think it's important that, you know, we talk to each other.
Yeah.
But in order to really change someone's mind about you almost have to prove it.
Yeah.
And I spent a long time proving it.
Yeah.
Walking my talk, being open, being vulnerable, saying, you know what? Tell me what you're scared of. Tell me things about me that maybe I'm missing. Maybe I don't know. What are you going to say?
I just want to say, I know you maybe for how long, a few months, and I already know you are a good friend.
Well, it's interesting because like I've met so many people and it's going to be weird. I don't know. We're just talking, whatever. You know, when I met you, I was just so taken by, you know, how anybody who wants to come to the States, you know, sees the best in the States. And what I get so nervous about is that we're not representing well. Like, I want you to feel welcome here. You know, you came here to really like find yourself, find your heart, find your career, find your passion. And I love that. I think that's something that's so remarkable about you as a person. So that already makes me so interested in you. And then to watch you put on shows and learn English in a way where you can be a stand-up comic, Oliver, the love that takes, the heart and soul and struggle that is, it's such a beautiful kind of war to watch you fight. And I have a lot of respect for that. So you're not anybody you're somebody that I'm very, it's not hard to love you and to want to support that kind of a person in the world, because you make such a difference for so many people.
I really appreciate you saying that. Oh my God, I feel so flattered. Oh my
God. I'll drag you in just a few minutes. So okay. Get ready for that.
Can you just keep complimenting me for the next hour? Just to feed my fragile ego.
You're so funny. But I did have to start seeing people the way that I wanted them to see me and make room for them, make room for their hate.
I remember you told me one thing. So you said one of the things you are really good at is to enhance your friends' words.
That's right. Yes.
And I think that is really interesting because I don't think I've heard anybody say that to me. I think because you the thing that you are good at is to help other people.
Yes.
And that is rare. I don't think a lot of people would say, oh, the thing I'm good at is to help other people. I think usually people will say, oh, the thing I'm good at is my job, is the thing I'm doing. Like, oh, I'm a lawyer, so I'm good at law. I'm a comedian, I'm good at making jokes, whatever.
Yeah.
But you never hear somebody say, oh, I'm a person who knows how to enhance my friends' works.
I read this book in high school. It was a fantasy novel.
Erotica?
No, it wasn't erotica. No, it was nerdy fantasy book. It was written by Piers Anthony. He's a great, fantastic writer. Everybody should check him out. He wrote a series of books set in this magical land called Xanth, X-A-N-T-H, Xanth. And one of the characters was this little girl who just didn't understand like what, like everybody in this magical land has had one magical talent.
Mm.
And some of these magical talents were, they called them magician level talents, meaning they were very powerful talents. Like somebody could fly or somebody could be invisible. But some talents were really small. Like some magical talents only meant that you could produce a little pink circle on the wall. Mm. That was your magical talent. That's all you had. So one of these characters, her name was Ivy. Her magical talent was enhancement. She could boost anybody's magic power around her, even though she didn't have one that seemed independent of other people's magical powers.
Mm.
She could still do that. So this person who could only put a pink circle on the wall, now they could put a million pink circles like snow in the sky. Because she was present. She was there. And it stayed with me because I didn't know what I was good at. I didn't know what I was for. Well, if I can't have my own talent and my own voice, well, I'm going to find people who I believe in and I'm going to be a part of their story. I'm going to make sure that they win because then if they're winning, I'm kind of winning.
I think that's beautiful.
Thank you, Oliver.
Yeah, I'm going to bring you to my comedy show every time now. Just have you there enhance my jokes.
You're great. I love your jokes.
No. You have a lot of love.
I do.
You
I
do. You okay. do. You have a lot of love to share.
I do. I love it. I love love.
Do you have any gay idols in the 80s and 90s?
It was hard for me to look at any gay person for the longest time as a hero.
Oh, that is interesting.
Yeah. Because I always thought, well, at the end of the day,
they are going to die from AIDS.
Well, I didn't think that exactly, but
I don't know if that joke is appropriate.
That's hilarious.
But I'm an HIV positive, so I mean.
Oh, Oliver. No, what I was going to say is I. At the end of the day, I was like, but they're not acceptable.
How about idols who are gay friendly?
Well, I'll tell you the first time that I actually registered a gay person as like, I want to be just like them. It was actually the comedian Wanda Sykes.
Mm.
And she's my comedy like idol. Like I know all her jokes. I've written them all down. I just love her. I like the way she thinks. I like the way she says things. I like her. I think she has a lot of love.
Yeah.
And it's weird, I guess, maybe a little bit to idolize like, a black lesbian woman. But I want to be just like her. but being gay has really changed too. And I have a lot more room to appreciate that quality about other people. I didn't want to just reduce a gay person to their sexuality. That I know that they have also had that struggle. I can also now appreciate that in a way that I didn't always before because I was still dealing with my own shame.
Yeah. So now I think your family are fine with you being gay.
Oh, super duper fine.
Super duper fine.
They love my husband very much.
Oh.
But we've been together 18 years, so.
Right.
Yeah.
What was the moment that you realized, I feel like my parents are fine with me being gay now?
I'll never forget the first time my mom met my husband. This was about a month after we'd been dating. And as she's leaving the house that night after we'd had this really lovely meal that Philip had prepared for my parents, she stopped me and my Latina mother and she said, I didn't know normal people could be gay. I was like, well, what am I? She's like, well, you are a little weird sometimes. Mijo, you are a little weird sometimes. Please.
Do you and your husband get married in California?
We did. Oh my God. Don't even. Oliver, now you're going to. I feel like I'm going to drag myself. We got married at Beverly Hills City Hall.
Okay.
We did it because
the real Beverly Hills, not the Beverly Hills for Taiwanese.
No,
the real Beverly Hills.
The actual Beverly Hills. Like, I don't know why we didn't go just downtown, but we went to Beverly Hills.
And you
he did it on his lunch break.
What?
Yeah.
Wait, did you guys have a wedding?
We didn't. I think both of us, I'll be honest, I think that we were both, I still had a lot of shame about marrying a man in front of people. I know that that was also true for Philip a little bit. And we didn't want our marriage ceremony to be political. We didn't want it to be a statement. We didn't want it to be something that people felt, you know, side eyes about. So in order to just make sure that none of that was there, we decided to get married quietly on our own on a Tuesday afternoon and not tell anybody. We didn't tell anyone. We didn't even tell my parents, and they were very upset. Oy, yoy, yoy, my mom. What are you talking about? You got married. When did you do this? And I was like, oh, mom, I'm so sorry, but it's not about you. What do you mean it's not about me? You hate me. I was like, okay, here we go. Here we go. Here we go. It's not about you, I promise. And I'm dragging her. I'm so mean. My mom is a perfectly lovely woman, and she's very, very, she loves me very much. even that reaction, like, you know, I was just, we didn't want any of that. It was just, you know, we had been together at that point for 13 years. We didn't want people to buy us a blender.
Mattress, sofa.
Who was I going to have my first dance with? My dad, his dad? Like, what, you know? And now I realize that, again, like, my avoiding the public acknowledgement of Philip as my life partner, there was still shame there.
Even until at this moment.
Yes. It's something that gets into your fibers of your brain, the little synapses.
Do you see yourself at some point in the future you will have a wedding?
I think so.
You think so?
Yeah, we've talked about it now. Mm. And I think in the time since, you know, we've gotten stronger.
Yeah.
And we understand now that nobody would ever look at us like that. At least the people who are important to us would never look at us like that.
Is it true that part of the shame comes from the concerns that you guys' career will be destroyed or would be damaged?
No, that's not really it. I think both of us, on a really basic level, this is going to sound so dumb. I don't want to make anybody feel uncomfortable around me. And it's so stupid because who cares if they're uncomfortable?
Mm.
My being myself, again, it's not a political statement to be alive. It's just, I'm just existing as a person. And I'm flawed. I'm not, certainly not perfect. Again, it's just so ingrained into my brain from such a young age, you know, that it's still in there.
Mm.
And I have to constantly, I don't always know when it's going to pop up.
So let's say if you go to a social situation where there are more strangers than people that you know, would you let people know that you are gay and you are married?
It's so funny. I've been trying to work on a joke about this. Whenever I go anywhere, there's this little voice in my head, you know, that I have a fight with. You know, it's like the queer activist in me is like, tell them now. Say who you are. Say your truth.
Yeah.
Say it. You know, make some devastating yet hilarious comment about their interior decorating and then just be yourself, bitch. And then there's this other part of me.
Pull up your pants.
Yeah. Where I'm just like, okay, it's okay. I don't have to tell anybody. Like, nobody's going to think I'm a straight man. I know how to listen.
Yeah, I think I think nowadays people's gaydar is pretty advanced.
Absolutely. And I don't need to have that shame and that mistrust. And I don't need to come out if I don't want to come out. You know, all I have to do is talk about my husband and then everybody knows. But I still have the anxiety of when is the right time to tell somebody or will I have to tell somebody?
Yeah.
I'm sure you have that too.
Yeah, I think I have that too. But nowadays, because I have a different status, which is HIV positive, that is something that I am more worried about.
More ashamed of.
More embarrassed of, or I don't know if that is the right word, but like, I don't mind telling people I'm gay if they ask, sure. And if they don't ask, I don't think I will bring it up. But there's a difference, I think, compared to you. I'm more obviously gay just from the exterior.
You present.
Just from the way I speak and my hand gesture, I think most people would know I'm gay without me telling them. Mm-hmm. But now HIV positive is like coming out of the closet all over again.
I agree.
You will hear me talking about this tomorrow, by the way.
Okay.
Because even within gay community, there are discrimination against the people who are HIV positive.
That's correct.
And that is what makes me most afraid of. Like, I will be discriminated by my own people.
That's right.
He's like, oh my God, we are, he's like, yeah, we are gay. We want you to be yourself. Everybody be yourself. Oh, but you are HIV positive. No, you cannot be yourself. But now I have been pretty open about me being HIV positive. I can do that. And I want to do that partly because it's my personality, especially being a comedian. I need to be honest with the audience.
Yes.
So I'm happy to talk about my HIV status.
Excellent.
But not everybody can do that. A lot of people, they are still be in the HIV positive closet.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I feel so sad for them. Like, they are not actually being fully accepted by their own community.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we need more education about HIV undetectable, untransmittable, and PrEP too.
Yep.
There are a gay men who don't even know there is this thing called PrEP.
I know. It's so crazy.
Yeah.
What's so frustrating is that we could eliminate HIV in one generation.
Yeah.
If everybody who had HIV was on their meds and everybody who didn't have HIV was on their meds, this thing would be over.
Yeah.
And so, again, you know, it goes back to like healthcare.
Yeah.
Access to healthcare. Access to information.
Yeah.
And it does get me mad when a person like you, again, who's just so full of love and, you know, I love how ambitious you are and how much you have a passion for life. Anybody who judges you for this other thing, that it's like blaming somebody for getting COVID. No, they didn't want to get COVID. And I'm sure they protected themselves as much as they could, but we're human beings and we're not perfect.
No,
and
we
nobody
are not.
Should
yeah.
expect perfection.
Yeah.
That's another prison that we put people and ourselves in. You know, I wanna make sure you know, like, that's not a problem for me. So I know you know that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's like, if you are judging me for being HIV positive, you better guarantee yourself never get sick in your whole life.
Exactly. Thank you.
Yeah, don't tell me you never get any flu. Don't tell me Don't you get any gonorrhea before? Yeah.
No.
It's just a little unfortunate that HIV is not curable yet. Yeah.
Soon, Oliver. Yeah. I think very soon.
Yeah.
I'm going to say in the next, like...
You know, it's so funny that I was chatting with another guy who is also HIV positive, and I asked him, when did you get it? And then he said, well, back in the 90s when AIDS was still cool.
That's such a good joke. Very good.
Very good, right?
I love this guy.
Let's take a break. Be right back. This podcast is brought to you by Captain Daddy. Are you looking for a sugar daddy? I am. Haha. Captain Daddy is a grocery shopping delivery service where you can hire a sugar daddy to shop groceries and personally deliver them to you. Captain Daddy connects you with local sugar daddies who are eager to help you with your life. Need hot wings and chocolate cupcakes but feeling too lazy to go out? Well, you can find a sugar daddy on Captain Daddy. Not only will your sugar daddy deliver food to you in a luxurious vehicle, but he will also offer to be your company of the day. Yep, with just one click away, you can be in the passenger seat of his Tesla. If you prefer staying in, of course, your Captain Daddy is always down to be a snuggler. Hiring a sugar daddy on Captain Daddy does not cost you any money. What? It's free? How come? Yeah, it's free. Cause what? Sugar daddy need no money from their babies. They just want to see you smile and hear you say, I, Captain Daddy. Due to the increased demand of this service, every customer can only order one sugar daddy per month. But if you use the promo code Oliver, you can order as many as you want per day.
and they come in different colors and sizes. Just remember, sugar daddies don't like to run into other sugar daddies. Make sure you space out your appointments. Go on CaptainDaddy.com and find your Captain Daddy today!
This commercial is created for entertainment purposes only. The product that was advertised that does not exist.
I know. So you also do stand-up comedy. And then in your stand-up comedy, you talk about your homosexuality.
Yeah.
And your gay husband and stuff like that. Have you ever performed in front of a crowd that you think might not be acceptable of you being gay?
Actually, in Germany, we had an audience. It was an English comedy night. So everybody there spoke English, which was, okay, great. But we had an entire, the second row was 12 Muslim young people.
Whoa.
And that was really intimidating. But part of what I worked into the set that night was that I was really embarrassed to be talking about this in front of these lovely people who I wasn't sure were totally okay with me. But I kept doing it in a way where I was trying to connect to them and being like, okay, I'm going to talk about my butthole now. Mm-hmm. You know, just explaining to them what was going to happen. And it got a lot of laughs and it was just a real moment. And they all came up to me after the show and they just thanked me for, you know, they could see how scared I was and that I kept going. And that meant a lot to them. But I was more surprised by this kid that I wasn't clocking, who also came up to me after that show. He was from Russia. And he said, I've never met a gay man before and or heard any gay person talk about their life because that's illegal where I'm from. And I'd like to shake your hand. And I was like, okay. And I shook his hand. And I wish that I would have said, well, follow me on Instagram. I'll send you a message sometime.
Mr. Matteo, by the way.
At Mr. Matteo, M-R-M-A-T-T-I-O. Anybody can send me a message and ask me a question. But I wish, this was like 5 years ago now, I wish that I had a way of telling him that I didn't know how much I needed to hear something like that. You know, I've always had a little voice in the back of my head that said, okay, this comedy thing, you got to stop. You're no good at it, bitch. And nobody cares.
We all do. We all have that voice.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. And so a guy like that, you know, it makes it seem like it's really for something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So whoever you are, Russian kid, thank you so much.
Was he in Berlin?
It was in Berlin, yes.
Okay. Yeah, was there a gay club, like a gay-friendly club?
There's several?
No, I mean the one that you performed at.
Oh, no, this was a heterosexual booker and everybody on the show was heterosexual. I was the only gay person.
I see.
Yeah. Okay.
And you performed in English?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Have you performed in German?
No.
Okay.
My German's not that great. I can order off the menu and talk about my husband and my dog.
You had a dog?
I had a dog.
Oh, you had a dog. Okay. I can perform in English. You can perform in German too, man.
I'm going to try all over it. Honestly, like watching you do as much as you do in English, I just, you know, it's so funny because like I know how hard it is to write jokes. And for you to have that extra challenge, I don't know that I would push through it. I'm too lazy.
But to be fair, I think when you write joke in your second language, it could be an advantage too.
Really?
Because you look at the language in a different way.
Yes. I guess that's true. Yeah. I guess that's true. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. But also, I've learned English since I was a kid. So it's a little different.
Okay. Your English is fantastic.
Yeah. When did you started doing stand-up?
I was 38. It was really late.
What was your realization? I want to pursue stand-up.
So when my husband and I moved back from Berlin, it was 2012. And we had our business crashed in Germany. We were running a little production company and it just dried up. Work dried up. And so we came back here like to start all over basically. And it was really hard because we were a little bit older at that point, you know. When we got back, things were so stressful that Philip had this congenital birth defect. He had an aneurysm in his brain. It exploded. It burst in his brain and it nearly killed him, but he survived. And I just didn't know until that happened that we could die at any moment, on any given day, that our lives could end. I just didn't think of life like that. when the doctors gave him the okay, it was a year. It was a year from the aneurysm. When the doctor said, you know what, Philip, you made it. You've recovered in a brilliant way. We're going to give you a brain scan every year to make sure there's no more weaknesses in the arteries in your brain, but you should be fine. It was when he got the okay that next week I signed up for a stand-up comedy class. Because it was something that I knew when they were wheeling him off to surgery, they told him he may not survive the surgery. And he said, the only thing I regret is not marrying you.
Oh.
And I said, okay. The only thing I regret is not doing stand-up.
It has nothing to do with you.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. But I did think about that over that next year. I had written this. I had this document on my computer called The Act. And I had been adding jokes to The Act for, at that point, you know, almost 20 years. And I was like, girl, it's now or never. I took the class. And I was like, well, I did it. I was only going to do it the one time. And it just happened that night. There was a guy there named Vargas Mason who had a show he was running at the Comedy Store on Sunset. And he comes up to me after the show and he goes, I'd like to put you on my show. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to do that one show next. And then that's it. And it's been 8 years.
That's beautiful. That's great. Yeah.
Is it? Thank you, Oliver. You're so kind.
No, I think there's a lot of reason why people started doing stand-up, because they had a like life-changing moment.
And it was a life-changing moment. Yeah. It's true. It's true. Yeah.
For me, well, it's not, for me, it's not a life and death moment, but for me, it was like, I was so depressed. I was, because I just graduated from Chapman University.
Chapman, yeah, yeah.
And then I had to find a job, and then I had visa issues. If I couldn't find a job, I would have to move back to Taiwan.
Okay.
And then I didn't have enough friends, and my English was not really good. That was like 4 years ago, maybe.
Oh my gosh, only 4 years ago.
And then I was molested when I was a child, but I have not, no, I already, but when like 4 years ago at the time, I didn't actually fully process the trauma.
Got it.
And I didn't know the experience of being a molested kid was actually impacting me in a negative way. I didn't know that.
Interesting. That's until, so fascinating.
Until 4 years ago, I was so depressed, did not have any friends.
You could, really?
I have like two friends, I guess.
So interesting.
Because my English was not good. I couldn't articulate myself enough to actually build friendships.
I'm sorry. I just love learning this about you.
And then I had all this childhood trauma that I had not fully processed back then. But I started seeing therapists, and then I processed my trauma. Mm-hmm. And I was a little snobby when I fully recovered from the trauma. I was like,
how do you mean?
I was like, fuck yeah, I'm no longer impacted by this trauma. And I'm like, I think most people, most straight guys who are so happy with their life, who have beautiful wives, they never had this terrible experience when they are a child. That is why they are winners. But does that mean they are more courageous? No, it just means they are lucky.
Yeah.
But now I recovered. I moved on from that traumatizing experience. So I guess I'm better than them.
It's so funny because I actually hear a lot of self-love in that. You know, I think what I'm hearing in that is just you wanted to give yourself a little credit for this big step that you had taken.
Yeah.
And I know that you had to put it in those terms because it was the only terms that you understood at the time. But I think it was so important to acknowledge yourself in that way, because it's I didn't know you then, and it's so weird because I see you as a comic, not because you do stand-up comedy. I always say this to my comic friends. It's the way that we look at life that makes us comics. It's not the fact that we do stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
I think with you, Oliver, you have a lot of joy. And you know that life is tough and difficult.
Yes.
But you make yourself a warrior for happiness. And that's something I love about you. And the fact that you were so oppressed and repressed by this trauma and not being able to put that joy in the world, I think that's ultimately what was killing you. And now that I see you so self-expressed, you know, you inspire me to be more open. And I'm just so glad that you had the strength and the courage to go off and get that part of your life back.
Yeah. And after I dealt with my trauma, I actually told myself, I think I can do anything now.
Yeah. Yes.
There's nothing that can scare me. There's nothing that can stop me.
I think that was how I took Philip's aneurysm. I was like, I thought I was afraid of things before. I didn't have anything to be afraid of. Now, like, I actually, that was something to be really afraid of. And I think you understand fear in a whole different way.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I'm more fearful when people think my joke is bad.
Yeah.
But I'm no longer afraid that stepping on the stage. Yeah.
That's so great, Oliver.
Yeah. So I know you were close friends with Dustin Diamond, who was Screech on Saved by the Bell. If you don't know, younger people might not know, right? Am I right about that?
Yeah, they might not know.
People who were born after 2000 might not know.
Probably, yeah.
Okay. Well, I didn't know about this because I did not grow up in this country. Yeah. But you were friends with him since you were a child.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, how did you guys become friends?
Yeah. So I was 12 years old when I met him, and my friend, Monique Griffin, she would go to the tapings every week and she had a little bit of a crush on him. She stayed to get his autograph, you know, after the show one time, and then they started talking and they ended up dating. And then, you know, Dustin would come over to her house and she was like my best friend at the time. And, along with this other girl, Vanessa, and the three of us, you know, we're thick as thieves at school. And then when Monique started dating Dustin, you have to remember, like, Saved by the Bell wasn't the national sensation that it later became. In the beginning, Saved by the Bell was just like a, you know, a little show that you might watch on Saturday morning. And the popularity of that show, like, really grew after it was even over. It became a pop culture phenomenon. But at the time, Dustin was just like this kid. And I met him at a time in my life when I really needed him. I was so insecure. I didn't really have a friend like Dustin, who was also kind of a nerdy guy. But Dustin was like literally like crushing it. You know, he was like on TV. And whenever we'd go to Disneyland, like, kids wanted his autograph. And it was just so cool. And forget about all that. Like, we got along so well. Dustin was really funny and he was nothing like Screech. Mm. Dustin in real life was very confident and very he wasn't awkward at all. He was very social and personal with people. Everybody that met him, like, he really paid attention to them and gave them all of his attention. And one time we went to this charity event that my parents were volunteering for. It was for the March of Dimes to help kids who were dealing with certain kinds of medical issues. And Dustin, he came to the event, and I think he ended up spending 4 hours meeting kids that day. They were just in this huge line, hundreds of kids, to meet him, and he signed every single one of their programs. And I stood by him. And they asked me about me, and Justin was like, yeah, he's an actor too. And I was like, ooh. He just made everybody he met just feel like $1 million. And it's just weird because in his later later life, he became kind of a punchline. And people didn't know that part of him. People only knew what they knew when he got in trouble. And Monique had stayed in touch with him her whole life, even though they didn't end up, you know, getting together. Dustin loved Monique in a way that even transcended like romantic love. And I love Dustin like that. And I know he felt like that about me. It was hard watching him have the problems that he had, because he'd had such a difficult life with his mom and dad. His pain played out in such a public way. And, you know, people would come up to me and they would say, did you hear what Dustin just did? And did you hear how Dustin just got in trouble throughout my life?
Yeah.
Even now, like in August, Monique and I are going to go to Indianapolis mm-hmm. where they're doing a NASCAR. One of the NASCARs is going to be wrapped in a Save by the Bell sponsorship thing. Like, the, you know, it's, there's going to be a Save by the Bell race car and they're doing it in honor of Dustin's memory. And so we're going to go and be a part of that in August. And it's just crazy how, like, again, you know, Dustin has always been a part of my life. And even now he's still a part of my life, you know, and knowing that he could go out and be successful the way that he was really inspired me and keeps me inspired to keep going. I want to win in life. Of course, for me, I love me. I'm great, whatever. But I know that I want to make Dustin proud too. I want him to know that, like, the way that he cared about me, you know, it wasn't easy to have a gay friend in 1988.
Yeah, I would imagine.
And he knew I was different and he wasn't ashamed to be my friend. He wasn't ashamed to say he was my friend ever. He never made me feel weird about. We never really talked about that when we were that young. It was later that he found that out about me, but it still didn't matter to him. It never mattered. And I needed that. I needed to know I could be friends with somebody like that.
Yeah.
And not be judged for my sexuality, but be judged on how funny I was. And I loved making Dustin laugh.
Yeah, I have a friend like that when I was a teenager too. And that really helps. Yeah.
Doesn't
but I did have a little crush on my friend who supported me throughout my teenager. Did you have a little crush on Dustin too?
To be honest, I didn't. I think, you know, I've this is so weird, Oliver, but I've only ever had crushes on guys that it turns out there's a little bit of part of them that I know they would have sex with a guy. They're like on the spectrum.
So you don't fall in love with straight guys?
I don't. Only because I know smart. That there's just something there. There's like a boundary there for me. But and it's not for me. It's just there. I don't know how to explain it. It's just there. But whenever I've been attracted to a guy, it's generally because there's a feeling there. There's a little bit of something there. It might not result in sex.
Yeah.
But I know there's an attraction to a part of me that they have.
Yeah.
That is more than just buddies.
Right.
And it's I've always left it there, you know.
When was your last interaction with Dustin before he passed away?
We met randomly, like in Vegas, about 15 years ago. But the thing is, like, that was in person,
right?
But we, Dustin was in certain kinds of financial difficulties, and we were always strategizing, like, how to get him to a place that was just, I think she felt really responsible for at least taking care of his heart, even though she couldn't take care of, like, all of his other issues and problems. And I tried to be there as much as I could for her in dealing with Dustin, but, like, him and I, like, we didn't talk after a while. And I think he had a lot of shame about stuff and I had a lot of shame too. And, you know, it's part of the problem of when we grew up and how old we are, you know, that we didn't have the ability to talk through our problems sometimes. And I wish I would have tried to be. The problem is that as Dustin got more famous, I felt less able to feel like he wouldn't think I was trying to get close to him because of his fame.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that he would come to me at one point, but he didn't. And that was really hard. But I know now that if we had the ability to have connected, we would have. But I still appreciate the time that we did have together.
It's delicate, I guess. I don't know how to describe that. It's like, I know what you're saying. And
I think there's always a weird thing that keeps people apart. In my case, like this, I have some famous friends, semi-famous friends, and it's a hard thing to work with. And it's part of being in LA.
Yeah.
You know that, you know, you've seen comics, I'm sure, become success, bigger.
Yeah.
And they're still your friends, but that kind of thing can get in the way a little bit, especially when you're in the same industry.
Yes.
And we have to try to fight through that to find the people on the other side of the professional aspect. But it gets hard. It gets tricky.
Yeah, it gets hard because once you become famous, you have all this access to all these opportunities. And your friends will be like, are you able to give some of your opportunities to stuff like that? And it just gets tricky.
It gets tricky because they feel like sometimes you feel like they don't, you don't want them to think you want something from them. It gets weird. The politics get weird.
But also, as a comedian, you always want opportunities. I'm not gonna lie that.
Of course.
Of course, we all want more jobs. We all want more stage times.
Yes.
So I'm not gonna be like, oh, I don't want the opportunity. I don't want the stage time. Sure, I want those, but also I want to be a friend first.
I have some tricky. If any of my famous friends are listening, this is hard for me. I love you guys, but this is really hard for me.
How do we balance the line between friendship and friendship who can work together?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think with Dustin, you know, like it was a hard thing because I just, after a while, I didn't know how to connect him anymore. Like, I think sometimes like his particular set of circumstances were very unique to him. He was as loved as he was like, you know, made fun of. And I think it got to him. And I wish I could have been a better friend to him. But I love him. And as much as I can do to keep his memory alive and to celebrate him.
I'm sure you were a good friend to him.
As much as I could be and as much as he let me be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming to my podcast, Matt
Oliver,
Tio Martinez.
You're very welcome. Thank you for all of your insightful questions.
Do you want to plug anything, your social media?
My social media? I think I already gave it away, but if anybody wants to ask me any follow-up questions, at Mr. Mattio on Instagram or even on Twitter, I have the same handle. And yeah, I just, everybody love each other so much more. Go for it. Do it, people.
Hey, cuties. That's Mattio Martinez. Amazing person. I just admire him for his universal love for the humanity. I wish I could be as selfless as him. You know, really, after my interview with him, I started to look inside myself a little harder than before. I was trying to see if there is anything that I can improve to contribute to this world more, or even just to love this world more. I think the hardest for me to do is to love my enemy. But when I say love my enemy, I mean really love them, really trying to understand their psychology, really trying to connect with them on an emotional level. But it's really hard because I don't think I have enough patience with people that I don't agree with. And that is something that I need to work on. Yeah, I have a long way to go. I think when I get older and then look back on this interview, I think I will be like, yeah, interviewing Mattio is one of the life-changing moments for me. Mattio really opened me up. Oh my god. Mattio, are you listening still? You made a dent on me. Well, I hope you guys really enjoyed this episode. If you have any feedback, any thought you want to share with me, all you can do is to follow us on Get Intimate Podcast on Instagram. Again, the Instagram handle is Get Intimate Podcast, and then you can message us from there. And if you would like to support us on Patreon, feeling a little generous? Yeah, all you can do is go on patreon.com/alloveronecomedy. And all my cuties, let's just try a little harder to love this world, to spread love. See you next time.
Let's get intimate.